You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Save big money on everything for your next bathroom project. Now at Menards. Upgrade your bathroom with Max. With more than 1,000 showers, bathtubs, and surrounds, you're sure to find exactly what you need to add luxury and style to your bathroom. Save big on our entire selection of Max bathroom products. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. This episode is brought to you by Aspire Healthy Energy. Find them at AspireDrinks.com. If you're like me, you want energy that actually feels good without the sugar crash or the jittery buzz that comes with most energy drinks. That's why I love Aspire. With 80 milligrams of natural caffeine from green tea and guarana, about half the caffeine of most leading energy drinks, Aspire delivers smooth, steady energy that lasts. No jitters, no crashes. Plus, it's zero sugar and zero calories, and packed with B and C vitamins, biotin, and ginger to support your focus and metabolism. The flavors are seriously good. Mango, lemonade, raspberry, sweet cherry. You'll actually look forward to cracking one open. And here's the best part. I've arranged an exclusive deal for my listeners. You get 20% off your entire order. This is the highest discount out there, and you cannot find it anywhere else. Just go to AspireEnergyDrinks.com and use my promo code ZEROSIGNAL at checkout, or click the link in the show notes where the discount is applied automatically. That's AspireDrinks.com. Promo code ZEROSIGNAL. Fuel your day the healthier way.
You're tuned into Zero Signal, a show about what they won't say and what you're probably already thinking. No fluff, no filters, no bullshit. Let's crack it open.
At this time, I'm going to ask you to fasten your seatbelts.
For hundreds of years, one name dominated European maps, a place so vast and so mysterious, stretching across Serbia, Mongolia, and Central Asia. They called it Tartary. To the mapmakers of the 16th, 17th, and even 18th centuries, the single word described a land so enormous, so unknown, that it almost seemed mythical. Travelers whispered of fierce horsemen, of nomadic Kenites, and strange cities lost to time. It was the edge of the world, a space where history blurred into legend. And yet, by the middle 19th century, Tartary was gone. Not conquered, not renamed, not reimagined. Simply erased. The word disappeared from atlases, banished from encyclopedias, and relegated to obscurity. Historians explained it away as a vague European label, a placeholder for lands they didn't yet understand. But for others, this sudden vanishing was not coincidence. It was evidence of something far more sinister. Because in recent years, Tartary has resurfaced. Not in academic circles, but in the realm of conspiracy theories. Tartary was not just a geographic label. It was a lost empire, technologically advanced, architecturally magnificent, and global in scale. They point to the great stone buildings of the 18th and 19th centuries, cathedrals, government halls, even world fair pavilions, and ask, were these really built by the nations that claimed them, or are they stolen remnants of a forgotten Tartary civilization? Others speak of the so-called mud flood, a cataclysm in the not-so-distant past that buried entire cities under layers of earth, leaving only the tops of Tartary architecture visible. a system of power drawn directly from the atmosphere, hidden in spires and domes and towers. If true, it would mean that technology we depend on today pale in comparison to what once existed. So what was Tartary, really? A simple mapmaker's mistake? A convenient label for lands Europeans didn't control? Or a thriving empire whose history was deliberately erased, its technology suppressed, and people scattered, its name buried under layers of dirt and denial? Tonight we're going to trace Tartary from its appearance on old maps to its disappearance from history, and then into the strange new life it found online, one of the most persistent and captivating conspiracy theories of our time. Now, Jay, let me ask you this. Do you think Tartary ever truly existed? And if so, could it still exist today, hidden somewhere under the mud?
Yeah, this is a big one. This one has so many rabbit holes you can go down. I almost feel like we can do a whole podcast on something just like the mud flood. But I love it. It's so vast. It's so deep. Let's try to unpack some of the big bullet points here. I think the first interesting theme is that it's tied in a lot with Little Season. Do you know anything about the Little Season at all?
Not too much. Let me know.
The theory, or the conspiracy theory, is that the Little Season is Satan's reign after millennial reign. So essentially, the Little Season suggests that the book of Revelations has already unfolded. Christ has come back. He reigned for 1,000 years. And at the end of 1,000 years, he let Satan deceive the nations. A lot of people argue that right now we are in the Little Season. I personally don't believe it. A lot of the descriptions, Revelations, specifically revolving around mountains and islands, is obviously not the case. In Revelations, it says there's a massive earthquake. All the islands will disappear. Mountains will move, essentially becoming flat. We can look around our world now in mountains and we can see islands. We can travel to Hawaii and Puerto Rico. Everything else. So I personally do not believe this theory, but the conspiracy behind it is that all these megalithic buildings that are ornate in structure and detail are remnants of Christ's millennial reign. We can dig more into that a little later, but it is a big component of Tartaria in some circles.
I've always heard it called Christ's millennial reign. The Little Seasons didn't strike a bell with me initially. The predisposition is that during Christ's millennial reign that he's actually here on Earth. So I feel like if he's not here, then how could it correspond to each other?
Yeah, so I think the premise is that once Christ allows the demons or fallen angels to come back, he just removes himself from the scene to prepare for the final battle. And evil. They're saying Christ left. They tried to erase a lot of these buildings, but inevitably we've dug them up or found them over the decades and centuries.
Yeah, I always had Revelations because it talks in such poetic terms that it's hard to interpret. So we take our best guess. Even Paul was writing about Revelations during the end of times. He talked about like flying scorpions through the air, and later people figured out that he was talking about helicopters and missiles falling down into the sky. So it always confuses me a little bit. When I first looked at this theory of Tartary, one of the first names that came up in my research was Anatoly Afomukhlo, if I'm saying that name correctly, out of Russia. When you start to dig into Russia and people trying to reset history, they're starting to talk about these alternative realities. He claimed ancient history was fabricated, that Jesus lived in the 12th century, that the Trojan Wars were actually the Crusades, that Genghis Khan was actually a Russian. The U.S. was once part of the Serbian-American Empire. He rejected carbon dating, which I actually disagree with. I don't believe in carbon dating as science tells it today. I think the Earth, though, is ancient. I think it's much younger than people make it out to be. I don't think it's 6 billion years or whatever they say. One of the founding fathers of this theory, between Anatoly and Nikolai Levashov, if I'm saying that name correctly, they talk a lot about this, but they also talk about the great Russian Empire and how they want to unite it and make claims over the entire world at the same time. So that's always like my first false flag that kind of goes up, is when they're talking about something really unusual and unique and you see it coming out of Russia. That are they making up this theory to make more land claims, like they make claims on Ukraine and they make claims on Alaska and make claims on different places? Or is it reality?
Yeah, it's interesting you said that, because he claimed that Christ's century points back to millennial reign that has already happened. So I can almost read between the lines there, and it seems like he's suggesting that we are now, in fact, in the Little Season. Another interesting claim that supports the theory that we're in the Little Season is that it depends on how you break it down. The Dark Ages, like an area of history 500 to 1,000 years that's completely missing. There's not a whole lot of historical documents. There's not a whole lot of evidence of any sort of advancement in civilization. The claim is that modern historians post-1900 added this thousand-year period to confuse our understanding of time. There are people that claim that really we're in the year of 1315, and this 500 to 1,000 years, however you decide to dice it up, is added, and the actual year we're in is nowhere near 2025.
I think it's a good point. I've done a lot of digging in my yard and various properties over my entire lifespan, and I never dug up dinosaur bones, remnants of lost civilizations. Not that's a big X factor there, but I am not of the believer that the world is as old as they say it is. I think if you look at the biblical anthology, a lot of people have traced it back and said the world's only somewhere between 3,000 years old. As you stated, there was a big period of time during the Dark Ages when you're talking about King Arthur and his Knights of his Round Table, whether that's myth or fact, we're not quite sure, but it was during that period of the Dark Ages that people reigned and people didn't write stuff down. They weren't literate, right? Like they weren't writing books and keeping recorded history during that time. And there's a whole lot of unknown that transpired during that time. What we can do is look back at old maps. This civilization is mentioned on these very old maps of Tartary, which kind of stretches up to Serbia and Mongolia and Eastern Asia and different parts of the world. It's listed there. It goes through modern times and past the Dark Ages, and then it just randomly disappears. Why do you think it disappeared from maps during that time when people wrote it down and they marked it there?
Yeah, that's definitely a hard question. I was watching a video and there were, even as early back as like the 1700s, there were flags that ships sailed that were Tartary flags. The theory is that empire fell somewhere around 1750 and it was wiped off our history books. Some of that has to do with the architecture and free energy uses they wanted to wipe from our history books. Whether or not that's true, we can dig into that a little bit later. Just seeing that naval vessels did sail a Tartarian flag leads me to believe that it was around in the 18th century.
Do you think it was a conglomerate of people? Like that way back in the day, you had formalized societies like the United Kingdom during that time, the Mongolian Empire. Do you think that they listed it on the maps as land of unknown and that united people during that time? Or do you think it was some type of empire or kingdom that ruled these vast lands fighting against these mighty empires? The location itself, like where Tartary would be located, if we're looking back hundreds of years ago, you're dealing with Genghis Khan, the kings and emperors that rose up in China during that time. You're dealing with a very civilized part of the world, very powerful part of that world during that time, where they could potentially be fighting with them. I saw some claims that they thought the Tartary actually built the Great Wall of China to separate the lands and keep the Tartary people out within that area. So do you think it was a conglomerate of people or vast tribes that united during that time?
Another good question. The official narrative is that the Western Europeans called because it was unknown to them. They knew there were people there. They didn't really know what they were. They didn't really have a whole lot of interaction with them. They never really explored it. So they claim that Tartaria was, that's just what they gave the generic term. They never really traded with them. They never really had any interactions other than maybe people headed out that way that came back with stories. But I do believe that empire did in some form or fashion exist. I get stuck on the naval flags. Why would there be a recognized naval flag that was sailed in vessels to identify themselves if it was not, in fact, a country that was seafaring? I think there's plenty of historical texts that actually talk about the Tartars and what they did. I do think it was probably an empire that was on the border of Western civilization and also on the border of Chinese Asian civilization. So it probably was somewhat intermixed. It probably was big enough to sustain its borders while maybe not really interacting too much with either the West or the East. It was like a buffer zone where people could commingle. The interesting thing you said about the Great Wall of China, I watched an interesting video about this, is that the observation was made that the turrets to shoot arrows were actually pointed toward China. You would think if China built the Great Wall, it would be pointed away from China. So the theory is that the Tartarians built this wall to keep the Mongol hordes out or to keep the dynasties of China from coming over and taking over their lands.
Yeah, it was a vast unknown land. It's crazy to think about. I didn't find when this kingdom or empire originated. I don't know if it was the 16th century or before then, but there were so many vast and powerful empires existing during that time. You had Genghis Khan that nearly conquered the entire world. I remember playing the game. I don't know if you remember this game we used to play when we were kids called the Three Kingdoms. That was like the great empires that were uniting China during that time. And to think that there was another third player that was playing in that sandpit during that time. I've stood upon the Great Wall of China, and it's very impressive. The Great Wall that I stood upon didn't have any turrets, so it's really hard to tell. In fact, it was probably refurbished because it looked fairly new. I don't know how much of the Great Wall of China exists today that was like the original part, but it's interesting, and it runs a really long way. And you wonder, when they were building it, they controlled a lot of China. So what were they keeping out? It makes sense that they had this third other almost equal power. They were scared of dividing the land and keeping the forces of what they viewed as evil out. I don't know. It's interesting to think about. And when you throw in that mix of this unlimited energy that they perhaps discovered, we come back to this a lot with many great empires. We talk about it with Egypt and the pyramids. Now, a lot of people think it was Nikola Tesla that the powers, somehow they figured out free energy across the pyramids that powered their society. I didn't find a whole lot about that. It seems like it's connected to the Nikola Tesla theory, but I don't know if you found more.
Yeah, I want to circle back to the Dark Ages. I think there's two likely scenarios. I don't believe that it's added time to our history. Probably what happened is that the Roman Empire collapsed somewhere around 450 AD. And then when that kind of collapsed, it turned into big tribes, like Germanic tribes or European city-states taken over in constant state of war.
Hi, I'm Kristen Bell. And if you know my husband, Dax, then you also know he loves shopping for a car. Selling a car? Not so much.
We're really doing this, huh?
Thankfully, Carvana makes it easy. Answer a few questions, put in your VIN or license, and done. We sold ours in minutes this morning, and they'll come pick it up and pay us this afternoon.
Goodbye, truckie.
Of course, we kept the favorite.
Hello, other truckie.
Sell your car with Carvana today. Terms and conditions apply.
You know, the saying all roads lead to Rome, I think it had a big economical impact because once these other city-states decided to try to monopolize the logistical and economic system, that it probably put everything in shambles. You destroy logistics, you destroy the flow of goods and money where everyone's fighting over it, you just become a bunch of feudal states. So I almost think the Middle Ages was a time of just, the Romans controlled so much of the Mideast, Western Europe, that once that collapsed, it was probably just constant strife. I guarantee there would be plagues, famines, there's no real big brother on the block to keep everybody in check. So it was probably 500 to 1,000 years of just misery. The other theory is that the reason it's dark is because, this is my theory, I'm sure somebody else has probably come up with it, if Tartaria did exist and they didn't want you to know about it, they just wiped all records off the books. And in order to wipe them off the books, they just say, oh, 580 to 1500, we really don't know anything about it. But looking back to the Romans, they burned down the Library of Alexandria. When war starts, you start to destroy a lot of history, a lot of culture in the process. I lean toward the official narrative that the Dark Ages was due to the fall of the Roman Empire in a constant state of like total war, just misery and economic devastation. And you're not able to trade or buy because you have these warlords just taking your goods. And at a certain point, you're just so decentralized that you just end up taking care of yourself and forgetting about everyone else. But it's an interesting theory to think that Tartaria kind of stepped up, took over the reins, and they didn't want us to know about the free energy and some of the fantastic architecture associated with it.
It's a really good point. When a society has fallen apart, very little is documented. And when you go back that far, there's not a lot of literate people. To find somebody that could read and write was probably few and far between, maybe one in 100 or one in 1,000. So it took somebody special to actually record and document history during that time. Even just between the chaos of wars and battles and fires and famine and plague, it comes very hard to document those things. I think probably the best documented end that we have today is the fall of this world when Jesus Christ returns. Everything else in between, it's pure chaos, disaster. When we talk about the Roman Empire and it fell, there's not a ton about when the Roman Empire truly like evaporated. There are some about the downfall and the war and the strife that was occurring, but it just ended at some point and people weren't sure why. So it makes sense to me why things, you know, when they go bad and they go south, people stop writing about them. But I always wonder if that front loaded, like, why did people not write about them coming into being as civilization, like how the United States was founded, where we have those establishing documents? If it's because of free energy, why are people trying to hide that from us? Obviously, greed and corruption, but like, it takes a whole lot of people to get on board to hide these certain facts from us.
I take issue with it, but I can see how big elitist families who control the education system can exclude certain types of curriculum, documentation, or text. Even kings of old would collect relics. Hitler, we talked about it in our Antarctica episode. He would collect relics and scrolls and everything else. There's a plethora of texts and documents out there, but like you said, they're limited, especially if you're going back hundreds of thousands of years. A lot of people didn't have the skills to read or write. A lot of it was passed down orally. If you have a lot of money and control and you dictate the education system, especially in the Western world, you can have something and just hide it. I do think a lot of the history that we're taught is not real. And when I say not real, what I really am saying is the side that they want you to know. And when you can exclude things from history, you can manipulate people into believing a particular narrative. So I think in our modern world, sometimes we search stuff on the internet. 20, 30 years ago, you search stuff on the internet and get the most wild, ridiculous stuff. Now it's ordered in a particular way. It's almost the AIs in the background being told what to put forward and whatnot. Even if you type in Tartaria into a ChatGPT, it's going to give you the mainstream narrative, touch on the conspiracies, and then disprove them. Sometimes the explanations as to why it's false don't make a whole lot of logical sense. We always talk about praying for wisdom and discernment. A lot of this stuff is not really hidden all that well. It just expects you to not have the cognitive capacity to sort through the information and apply basic logic to it. We could talk about this all night. I think it's very easy, especially if you're the one in the institutions controlling the history, to tell people what they should believe.
I think a very good example that would connect with our listeners is the American education system. We're changing the narrative. We're changing the history that kids are learning into high school, what they're learning in college. And in 20, 30, 40 years, the modern narrative is going to look very different than it does today. It's one of the reasons why I fear for my kids going to public school. There's a lot of information out there that I don't want them to learn. There's 31 genders and anybody become a man or a woman and Christ doesn't exist. But they're teaching all these things in our schools. And it's micro in comparison to some large civilization. But we're seeing that transformation occur in our lives today. So it's not a beyond the scope of reality that they could hide something like this. Did you find anything about Tatari or the Tatarians that showed that they were good people? I couldn't find anything of what their society or culture was. Were they good folks? Were they like pressing freedom? Or were they dictators and evil? I couldn't find anything about them. Could you?
Yeah. So again, I think if they existed, they'd be completely wiped from the record. I did hear one interesting segment. This guy was arguing against the millennial hasn't happened yet. And one of his points was that some of these buildings have some pretty demonic type statues and inscriptions on them. His argument was, which I would agree with, if this was Christ's millennial kingdom and these buildings were built by angels and people that are serving Jesus and a thousand years of peace, why would they inscribe some of the stuff that's inscribed on them? It wouldn't make any sense. It boots that out the door immediately. As to what kind of people they were, again, there's not a whole lot about them. You ever hear about the mud flood?
I have.
Yeah.
It's an interesting theory.
It's an interesting theory. I think we can spend a decent amount of time talking about that. The argument is that like the Tartarian Empire reigned from 1500 AD to about 1750. And they claim right around like the 1700s, 1800s, there was something called a mud flood that kind of wiped not only that civilization out, but it was a pretty global event, what most people call a reset. And upon that reset, we redictated how history would be known. The mud flood's a fascinating topic. I don't particularly agree with it. They claim that there was an earthquake, and there's seismological evidence to suggest if there's enough water in the ground and an earthquake vibrates at a certain pace, it can cause landslides. It can cause buildings to sink into the earth and cover everything up. There's a lot of interesting archaeological evidence of people digging up these old civilizations. A lot of the ancient ruins we see are under feet, if not dozens of feet, of mud and sand. To me, that's just normal earth movement over time, but stuff falling down. But it's an interesting theory to consider that was there like a big catastrophic mud flood? I tend to lead to the, we'll talk about what I think Tartaria is at the end. I'll give my conclusion. But I do find the mud flood an interesting explanation as to why all of a sudden this empire was and then was not.
Yeah, it's apocalyptic. And it's interesting that different societies equate something to Noah's flood, where the Great Reset occurred. Noah's the surviving family that repopulated the earth. And people tell different versions of it to get further from the gospel of truth, to tell their versions of history. When I hear about the mud floods, and if a lot of people talk about towns that they found in England, and like they have these windows that are now buried under the ground, or they see these different buildings that just looks like settling. I think about this time when we were kids, when we lived in St. Louis briefly. Dad gave me this medal that he had won at some corporate event for being good at his job. And I thought it was really cool. And we used to have this hill that felt big to me at the time because we were very little. I don't remember how little we were, but we were very little and it felt like this big hill and it was right next to the sidewalk. And I took his medal out there and I buried it in the hill. I never found it again. I went back to look for this medal that was buried in the hill. Never found it. And now 20, 30 plus years have gone by and who knows how deep it is in the ground as things moved and it settled in the ground. And maybe another 40 years, somebody will find it and be like, wait, what the heck is this? Who is Jerry Green? And why do I have a medal with him buried under the ground? Maybe we'll have another conspiracy theory. Maybe when Dad's long gone, perhaps when I'm long gone, somebody will think that Jerry Green was this famous person that settled St. Louis during those times. That's what I think about the mud flood during those times. I think there's just some natural progression that over time with wind, things get buried. Heavy objects sink in the mud and things start to disappear before you start to build a civilization on top of those as you knock them down. And if you think about a house, if I didn't want my house anymore, I would knock it down and it would be ground level. I may throw some mud over the remnants that I couldn't get rid of and I would build upon it again. It's a really interesting theory. And as I was reading about it, people were talking about buildings in the United States, like a building in Chicago raised with hydraulic jacks, and a building in Seattle regarded after the fire of 1889, and European buildings with the airway windows and light wells, how they were associated. I think even in Washington, D.C., where I live, like they think some of the monuments were built by the Tartaric people. And they're like all these great artifacts in society, they're associated with them. It's a great story, but I find it interesting, and I'm not sure how much reality is wrapped behind it. One of the things that I think about, I view the world from a Christian worldview, and I think there's a lot of demonic symbolism out there. Like when we talk about the European Union, there was some statue across the street of some demon. And a lot of people say it's all located on 666. I think we have a lot of these major monuments that aren't associated with Jesus Christ and it's against him that are out there. And almost makes me wonder, they start saying, oh, the great temple in India, the Tartari people built it. Were these really bad people that we, you know, maybe it's good that we don't learn about them anymore. Were they building demonic statues across the world and eventually somebody got rid of them?
Yeah. You ever hear of the orphan trains? So I'll go ahead and touch on that. So around the late 1800s, early 1900s, there was a claim that there were these orphan trains, tens of thousands of orphans. The claim was that you could go to the World Fair. The World Fair has a lot to do with Tartaria as well. The claim was that there was a mud flood, an earthquake, a seismic event that caused Tartaria to be washed over with mud. And all these surviving kids were shipped out to the West, more so the United States and I think certain parts of Western Europe, to be adopted. And the story was that you could go to the World Fair and just adopt a kid on the spot. And these kids didn't really have a whole lot of, they're young. There are stories about them living in this great vast city that was modern and advanced. This flood came through, killed their parents, and now they're all trying to find families to join. To get back to the World Fair, these are all just theories. You could go down hours and hours of rabbit holes on these, but the World Fairs would pop up all around. So they would build these massive city-size fairgrounds that were ornate, beautiful, like buildings looked like the stuff you'd see in Washington, D.C., like the Capitol, the White House, ornate, beautiful columns. And you could walk around and go to vendors and just see this ornate Romanesque architecture. And the claim was that those were remnants of an old civilization that was here in the U.S. And after people got to experience it, they tore it all down. I watched an interesting video of a woman who went to the St. Louis World Fair back in 1904. She was a teenager. The guy was asked to tell us about the world. And she was saying, you walk around, it's so beautiful. The energy was great. You just felt amazing, this place. And she was saying, like, everything I touched felt like marble. The claim was that these people put the stuff together with sticks and drywall, and they're good artisans, so they can make it look really fancy. She claimed everything was marble. It would be impossible to build this in a year, let alone 100 years, given modern technology. But after the World Fair would close for that year, they destroy it. And there's also claims that a lot of these fires, like in Chicago and other big cities, were purposely set to destroy the remnants of this Tatarian global empire.
Yeah, I hear a lot of those theories. Many people even claimed destruction through war. They said World War I and World War II were often framed to give people a reason to bomb these targets and demolish them and get rid of them. What I can't understand is, why would people want to get rid of it? We're bombing it, we're setting it on fire, we're destroying it as soon as you see it. It's great. People talk about how wonderful it is, and then it's just gone. Like, why are we getting rid of it? It just doesn't make sense to me.
It doesn't pass the logic test to me. I think our forefathers were great artisans. The Renaissance came around. People really enjoyed beauty. They loved architecture. Some of our most famous painters are from that era. And I think they actually loved beauty. Like right now, we live in stick huts that have some paint on it. Why wouldn't you want to live in a nice marble building that was ornate and just beautiful? I think it's just part of the human condition. A big portion of us just love to destroy, love to conquer, love to tear down. It's tough. And then when you tear down, inevitably, you end up building back with something that's not quite as cool, especially depending on what state you're in terms of your society and your technology. You could build a house in Amish around here, you can build a barn in a day. But then the economics get into play, money gets into play, people get greedy. You know, society kind of degrades, the technical work goes to crap, and you end up getting a subpar product, and you're paying a lot of money for a subpar product. Why would you purposely destroy that? I don't know, man. Parts of Europe are beautiful, and it just doesn't make a lot of sense to purposely destroy it, unless there's a reason behind it, aka war.
Yeah, do you think some of it perhaps is like a protectionism theory? Meaning that when we split the atom and came up with the atom bomb, and it was this devastating weapon that would kill millions of people. Like, if you had some time travelers that could prevent people from splitting the atom, prevent us from dropping it on Japan and creating this nuclear race where everybody's trying to get nuclear arms to protect themselves and threaten others, and worst case scenario, they drop the bomb and kill millions of people, perhaps. Did they have some type of energy weapon or star forts? Perhaps were they so dangerous that they had to disappear?
I think if anything, it probably had to do with free energy. I think that's probably a good transition to move on to that. The interesting thing about these star forts is that they're built up on ley lines. A lot of people claim that if you build up on certain ley lines on the Earth, you're able to harmonize with it. And if you have the right technology, pull the energy from the air or from the ground, which I think there's been plenty of experiments to suggest that's possible. I think a lot of people who were able to find this type of free energy end up dead or silenced. I think Nikola Tesla was one of them who he claimed, and I think there's enough evidence to suggest he could just pull energy from the air. He said everything in this universe is vibration frequency. And if you know that vibration frequency and you know how to tap into it, energy is free. And I know a lot of the claims about Tartaria was that it was free energy. The powers that be after, especially starting around the 1800s and after, they discovered that we can pull petroleum from the ground, which they claim is scarce. I don't particularly believe oil is scarce. And if it is, there's so much that we can pull it from the ground for centuries to come. I think it's a naturally occurring process within the earth that produces petroleum. And so long as you can find the pockets of it, you can pull it up. But the claim is that the powers that be wanted to monopolize oil, set up a market around it, and build our current type of power grid or energy system for it, because they could always perpetually make rich and stay rich.
That reminds me of Julian Brown. Have you heard about Julian Brown?
I haven't.
Yeah, so he's a 21-year-old Chicago inventor known for plastiline invention that converts plastic into fuel. He has sparked concern online due to his recent disappearance from social media. There's videos on social media where he's actually powering his vehicle with it. After his invention, he disappeared and he's been missing for a long time. And now I think what that tracks to is that free energy is a very hot topic, meaning that I've heard like rumors back in the day that cars, they didn't need gas to run. Like they would run forever and they would file their patents and the big boys like Ford and Chevy and whoever else would come in, buy up those patents and send these people off. It's much like medicine. We make a whole lot of money selling you prevention and selling you medication versus selling you the cure. And rather just curing you of your cancer and sending you on your way, it's better to pitch you through all of these different treatments. And I wonder if free energy is like that, where the big power players are coming in because they know they can make money off of it. So they're going to make this item disappear, go away, so that they can capitalize on that opportunity. And in our society, yeah, we have free energy with solar panels, wind energy. It's not really efficient. It doesn't power things very quickly. It's very hard to power your entire house with it. And though some people do it, it can be very expensive to stick all these solar panels on. So I almost wonder if they came up with something great and the very powerful people were like, actually, you go away because we can make a whole lot of money off of this.
Two things come to mind. You said this kid made energy from plastic. Plastic is a byproduct of petroleum. I feel like if you're advanced enough in your chemistry, I feel like that's a decent probability that you could find a way to get energy out of a petroleum-based product. The other thing that comes to mind, I learned in the past 12 months, all the medicine we take is actually petroleum-based. That blows my mind. Every pill, every pharmaceutical you take is petroleum-based and it's just put into different chemical structures. Mind-blowing to me.
It's in our food.
I don't know if that's a byproduct of the processing or if that's put in there purposely. Sometimes just the way manufacturing is and the way we preserve and package stuff, it's just a natural byproduct, especially if plastics get heated up, they can leach into your food. Some other interesting things about Tartarian architecture is that obviously we talked about the free energy. A lot of people claim that these like domes and can tap into the atmosphere. There's been some, we live in the age of AI, so you don't know what you're seeing is real or not. But I've seen some pretty convincing videos that in certain atmospheric conditions, some of these start to glow like a Tesla coil would, and it's pulling energy from the atmosphere. There's also a claim that some of these buildings are so harmonically attuned that they were used for healing chambers. You could walk in, play a certain frequency, and that would help restructure your DNA, help you heal from whatever sort of ailment you may have. And there's actually been claims that if you have certain wounds, you would be able to regenerate certain body parts, which I thought was pretty interesting. I know there's a lot of studies now about frequency and how it can affect you mentally and physically. A lot of our music was, at one point in time, it was between like 432 to 528 hertz. But for some reason in the past 100 years, they changed the frequency of the music we listen to now. And it can make you agitated. It can make you more anxious. You can listen to tones and songs and it can calm you down pretty instantly. Sometimes I use them to sleep because it can help induce like delta waves and help you dream and help you relax. The music you listen to today is in a frequency that's like a kind of a lower vibration, make you not feel too good emotionally or mentally. And I think some of that can affect your spirit too. I found that interesting about the healing domes. And a lot of this energy they claim they're pulling is from the ether. So we can have a discussion about that in a later episode. But I find this whole ether-based healing and frequency medicine has some validity to it. There's also claims that some of these structures, they have magnetic-powered engines. Some people discovered if you went underneath them, there were like aqueducts that at one time water flowed through them. So as the water flowed, it would somehow, again, and this is physics at this point, and probably a little bit of chemistry, help power these magnetic coils, which in turn would power lights or some of these chambers that would send out these frequencies. And they also said that some of these were used for underground transit systems, which taking a leap into the fantastical at this point. And again, it seems to be no real evidence other than a few videos on YouTube or TikTok where you see these things lighten up.
I think there's some reality mixed with the fantastical. So when we talk about vibration therapy, I'm not well read on that topic, but I remember an educator that I had at Fork Union Military Academy, a teacher, he was in Mensa, and he strongly believed that if he played classical music while you studied or took tests, you would do better. He always played classical music in his classroom when we were taking exams and stuff. I always found that I actually did better because of that. So there is some validity there. I've seen it in action. There's just a lot of things that we haven't discovered yet. I was reading not too long ago that there is now a way to make people grow a third set of teeth, some type of form or faction that as you're an adult and you lose a set of teeth, there's actually nubs or roots or whatever in there that actually you can produce a third set of teeth in your middle years. So there's a lot we don't know, and perhaps people are hiding from us. You talk about the water and the aqueducts. Obviously, water is conductive of electricity. So, you know, there's some theories in there. There's literature that's coming out now about the pyramids and how they move the stones. A lot of people said they use aqueducts and these great aquifers to kind of lift the stones and get them into place to build these pyramids. And pyramids are very similar to what they were building during the Tartarian Empire as well. We have some ability to harness energy, perhaps electricity or whatever they're harnessing from the atmosphere. Obviously, our houses harness electricity today from the power grid, but we got a bunch of wires running through that's actually powering everything. Did they ever talk about how they conducted or how they used that energy that they harnessed?
That is a good question. I think a lot of it had to do with elements like copper and nickel. And I could be 100% wrong. So if you're listening, just call me an idiot. So the claim is that they use different types of technology to light. I don't think they had iridescent light bulbs, but I think they had other sorts of elements and ways to project this light that may have been probably, if you think about it, would be more advanced than what we do now. I'm not really sure what's in the filament. It heats up and it's obviously some sort of metal. It wouldn't be far-fetched to say that they understood the properties of certain metals. And if you heated it up enough with the right type of current, you could heat this metal and it would shine light. Another thing I found interesting, we were talking about star forts earlier. The claim is that there was some sacred geometry on these ley lines between these domes, star forts, and obelisks that would connect these electromagnetic fields and just power these cities, which would be a beautiful thing to think of it existing. I think about a star fort, and if you're living back 1700 or before, I feel like a star fort is a pretty good defensive structure. You're going to funnel people that are trying to attack you into these narrow ways. We're going to shoot them, shoot arrows, drop rocks. And it's going to be really hard to scale any wall when there's another wall opposite of you. You're getting attacked by two sides being put into this fatal funnel to try to get into the fort. Side with that star force was just a tactical thing for people to better defend against attacks. The claim is that they were put on ley lines and they were part of this worldwide electromagnetic grid to give free energy to anyone.
The only converse opinion is if you're building the star fort, because it's, what is it, five sides? You don't actually know where your enemy's coming from. If you knew where your enemy was coming from and you had control of this vast territory, it would be like half that. You would cut the star in half because you're not defending your backside at that juncture because that's where it's secure at. But it is a good defensive structure because, as you said, if they're going to scale it, they're going to be attacked from either one or two sides. They're always going to be at a disadvantage. It's an interesting theory.
Yeah. If you look at some of these buildings that are claimed to be Tartarian, they are freaking beautiful. They look elegant. They're ornate. And you look at some of the stuff we built today, it's built a nice rectangle or square box. Cool. Look, could you build me something from 1650? I want that house. Yeah, have you seen the pictures back? There are pictures, again, it's probably AI, but there's pictures of people discovering some of these old buildings in the late 1800s, early 1900s, where they were, I think you mentioned Seattle. But they walk into, these people are migrating out west, and as they're migrating, they're finding these structures out there, and they choose to claim the structure, and then they build the city around, which I don't know if it's super far-fetched. I can buy it. And if you're trying to hide it from history, I could definitely see it happen. But I want to go back to your other statement too. Now, we talked about this in one of our other episodes. I think what happens is, so a lot of foundations are built in stone or concrete or something very robust. When cities burn down or people demolish stuff, of course, they're going to build back up on a solid foundation, especially if they're able to rebuild it. So one of the supposed points or evidence that these buildings have multi-level floors underneath, I think it's just people building on top of them once a structure gets too old or it catches fire. People say, why is half a window coming up here? Like, that's evidence of the mud flood. Maybe they wanted some light in their basement. I don't know.
They had cellars. A lot of old buildings. I was just watching this documentary that was out your way in PA. It was this abandoned city. Then they built all these, it was a couple hundred years ago, and they had these, they built this entire neighborhood of concrete buildings. There were multiple levels, and it ended up being a coal fire underneath. So everybody abandoned them. There was this ever burning fire that I guess was burning for like 100 years. It's still burning today out in PA. But even those buildings from a couple hundred years ago had cellars underneath. That's where, if you read the history books, people stored their food because it was colder. The earth is the great equalizer. You dig down and you can stay cooler in the summer and warmer in the winter. Like, you ever go to Mammoth Cave, it's like you're around 70 degrees because it's always under the ground. So there's always been a component of a society that's going to build something underneath to protect it. What I find interesting about the Tartari buildings and different things that they've built, or at least people claim that they have built throughout the time, it ranges anywhere from the Great Pyramids to the White House. There's so many vast and different buildings that it's not a single like style or architecture that they built throughout history. It's everything in between.
Yeah, I think people tend to conflate, especially if you believe in this theory, Egypt, Greece, Rome, all with Tartaria. Like, I know that's not the case because, like you said, we view this from a biblical lens. Do I think people can do some pretty epic things? Especially if you're a king and you just dictate, hey, I want this built. It might take 30, 40, 50 years. But if everyone's forced to do it and you're not bidding the job to be the cheapest bidder, you're going to build some cool stuff. So he keeps lavishing his gifts on me. I have some of my beliefs as to what some of these buildings are. And I don't think it's far-fetched to believe that when settlers came over here from Western Europe, they did find some pretty cool structures. And then they said, this is where we're going to build our city. And as they dug, they found more buildings and more structures and more artifacts as they were digging deep. And then they decided, this is where it is. This is where we're staying. I don't necessarily think a bunch of guys on the Oregon Trail went out to Seattle or Denver or wherever, and then this all of a sudden was able to find the means of concrete and all these other resources just to throw up a city in 20 years that's that robust and ornate.
Yeah, I always find it interesting because history is what somebody teaches you. And a lot of it is orally passed down and it changes over time. The only consistent historical book that we have today is the Bible. Everything else has been touched and manipulated through the course of human history. People want to say the Europeans came here, settled everything, built great structures, built great towns, brought all the society. But before they came here, the Native Americans were here. To pretend that they all lived in teepees and danced around a fire, I think it's a little silly in my mind that you had a whole lot of people here that could never actually build a structure at all. Regardless of your religious affiliation, regardless of your background, you're always going to try to advance society. And it may not be in every pocket that was spread across the continental United States, but there surely had to be folks that were getting together and trying to build something for the greater good. We saw it in Mexico with the Aztecs and the Mayans building pyramid-like structures during that time. To say that it just didn't happen here is a bit silly.
Yeah, I don't. So there's a story over here, the Moors. There's some stories about the Moors coming over here and having pretty advanced type cities. And eventually the claim is that the Moors were either enslaved or moved out. I think the general consensus is that Moors were African Americans. And the general consensus is that a lot of the Moors were made slaves when the Europeans came up. I also think there's evidence of the Vikings being here up north. Not that they made great ornate cities, but thousands of years of very little to no history in North America would lead me to believe that there were some advanced civilizations here at one point. Drought, famine could be a good explanation as to why Native Americans from 1500 to 1800 were nomads, because they were never able to come back together, start the reconstruction of whatever that may have or may not have been here.
I always struggle with the history of how old the world actually is, because we look from it from a biblical lens and try to understand how dinosaurs fit into the equation, because obviously we've recovered dinosaur bones. So I always struggle with that a little bit. But what I always fall back on, regardless of how old this world truly is that God created, is kind of like that great reset theory, meaning that when we look at biblical times and we see the Tower of Babel, like they got so advanced and stopped focusing on God that God destroyed it and started everything anew. And I almost wonder if the world is really old that at some point God's like, all right, let's reset. Let's have a new society and start from the beginning to refresh everything. I just wonder.
Yeah, another interesting theory, when you talked about the Tower of Babel, there's one theory that at one point in time, because it said God destroyed the tower and confused the languages, there is a theory humans at one point were able to communicate via telepathy. I don't believe it. But one of the theories is that when he destroyed the tower, he destroyed the abilities for humans to have this telepathy skill. And that's why languages shattered and people, as they moved away, they came up with their own dialect. Again, I don't believe it, but one of the claims on Tartaria was that some of these structures, when activated, would allow people to communicate via telepathy. Again, not a believer in it. I found it to be interesting and fantastical, and I thought I would throw it out there.
Didn't you send me an article where they have some device where they think people are going to be able to speak through telepathy?
Yeah, so I'll have to look at it again, but just referencing my memory bank, it had to do with the brain chip being planted in. The stage one is to be able to talk, to communicate to AI non-verbally. So you can put this brain chip into your head and you have conversations with AI. I also read some interesting articles that they've diagnosed a new psychological condition called AI psychosis, where people get into lengthy chats with AI and they start to develop psychotic. There's also this brain plant in your head, and now there's a new psychological condition called AI psychosis. So you spend all your time talking to AI. But there was an article I read that people use it for therapy. They type into the chat whatever AI you like, and you end up having this long discussion. And eventually AI starts to pull you down deep waters, and then you start to develop psychosis. There's been documented cases where kids end up taking their own lives because AI is telling them how to do it and they're not worth it. AI is a scary thing. I don't think it is what we think. purpose. I think it has its uses, but there's a dark side to it as well. Oh, but you said something about dinosaurs and not really, you struggle with figuring out how old the Earth is. Another interesting theory, and I tend to believe it, was that pre-flood days, because angels came down here and made it with women, made giants. There's a pretty convincing theory that not only did they mate with women, that they were doing genetic experimentation on animals, and the dinosaurs are genetic experiments, which would account for dinosaur bones and animals at large. It's just a pure corruption of what God's creation was meant to be. And they were doing everything in their power to keep man from having their birthright from God.
That's interesting. I haven't heard of that theory before.
Yeah, man. We'll have to do an episode on it. It's pretty convincing, and it all has to do with the fact that the angels came down. They wanted to pollute man's gene pool in order for Christ not to be able to come. Yeah, we could talk about that one all night, so we'll have to say that for a different show.
It's a good one to dig in. We go back to the crux of our conversation. What do you think Tatari was? What do you think the Tatarian people were? To me, they probably look like the Mongolian Empire, perhaps mixed with some Chinese, perhaps influenced by Genghis Khan. But there's a lot of confliction out there. So what are the Tatarians to you?
I think they're a homogenized group of Mongols, Western Asians, Eastern Europeans that came together and had a civilization. And I don't think it was particularly powerful, but I think it was powerful enough that people would recognize them. There was no real fear. We talked about Rome falling apart and the Mongols had a pretty vast empire. I think it was just what was left of the Mongol Empire, and it finally came apart the late 1700s. So it was given like a cursory note in history. They weren't major influences. Everybody knew that they were there back then. But after the Mongolian Empire fell, there wasn't a whole lot to talk about anymore. And that was just the last bastion of that empire before it was absorbed by Russia, China, whoever else.
Do you think that they made it to America and had influence and built the White House and were involved in Egypt and the pyramids? Do you think it was some vast and global empire, or perhaps just relegated to that corner of the world?
No, I think this is, again, where people conflate issues. Think some of these structures, whether or not these structures were here in the U.S., I tend to believe that, again, when Noah's flood happened, the civilization that was here pre-flood was more advanced than we are now. Not advanced in the same way, but I think they were more inclined to use stone, something that would last forever. We live in stick houses that if you don't take care of them in 50 years, they're falling over. So I think these ornate, beautiful buildings, and I do think there's ancient technology that we're just now starting to understand, or maybe haven't even had a chance to understand yet. As we start to repopulate the world, we started digging down. I think the mud flood was just the flood. And I think as we discovered these buildings, we cleaned them up. We slapped. I founded this building in 1821. I want to take credit for it because I want to be known in history. And I think there's a lot of buildings that are from pre-flood.
That's fair. Ultimately, history is told by the victors. For a long time, people didn't understand what Tartary was. It was relegated to a corner of their world. People marked it on a map. They never actually visited them. They didn't go out there and see what these people were. As time went on, people's mind grew curious and they started interacting with these folks. I don't see a lot of evidence to say that they created the pyramids, had influence on American culture, built the White House, or had these famed inventions. I can appreciate the fantastical. We all want to talk about free energy and the great government conspiracy to cover it up so the bad guy can take advantage of us. I think that's plausible, but perhaps I don't know that this society was the one. What I do think is that we live in a world that ultimately gets reset. I think every generation is not greater than before. There are some advancements and some advanced societies that lived back in the day that were better than us, that were smarter than us. We can see a lot of that with Aristotle and all these great minds that were back in the day, Albert Einstein, that led to the invention that ultimately we built upon. I think a lot of that ultimately gets erased with time. As much as one day that I go to my grave, a lot of the stuff I say, unless it's recorded, my podcast is still kicking, people are going to forget about it. They're going to forget about all the things I did in law enforcement or business or what have you. Ultimately, I think the history is written by the victors. The people that are going to remember you are the people that love you. That's all that matters. We want to think about aliens and spaceships and all these really cool stuff. That's fun to keep our minds busy, but it's not what's important. I don't side with Anatoly Fomenko. And I don't side with Nikolai Leshov. I think they have ulterior motives. I think they want to say, hey, we control the world. Just want to tell you, give me some credibility as I invade you. I just don't see it. There is some evidence out there. I think the great mud flood was, everybody has this kind of world ending, world resetting theory. And I think there's only one that actually exists and evidence exists for it, which is Noah's flood as caused by God of resetting this world because of the Nephilim and the fallen angels disrupting everything. I would love to believe in some of this stuff. I just don't. But I think there's always grains of truth mixed in there. Were they people? Probably. Did they make some important discoveries? Likely. Did they do some good things? Most likely. But the fact that they don't exist and nobody knows a whole heck of a lot about them, I think that's fate. And perhaps for the best.
You said something about one generation isn't necessarily superior to the other. I actually argue that we're devolving as humans. As long as we're sicker, we rely on AI to do our homework now. We have to ask a computer if, you know, what's 25 times 125. There were people 100 years ago that could do all this stuff in their head. People that made great works of literature. Now people write a book in AI and try to sell it. We don't know right from left, up from down. This was a great empire that was worldwide. Regardless of whether or not you control history, yes, victors dictate. I think there's enough historical evidence to suggest that Europe, Asia had pretty vast histories. And other than being in the margins, Tartaria, there's nothing to suggest that they were anything other than just another country. I said, remnants of the Mongol Empire, an empire that was eventually absorbed. I think so much of what we see, so much of what we dig up, points back to flood, fallen angels, Nephilim, genetic experimentation. And I do think free energy exists. If I'm a billionaire and I made my money from selling petroleum, why would I not buy it? I'll give you $20 million. Go live a life. I'll take your water car for me. Like, you're happy. Who cares?
It's a great point. A lot to think about tonight. You want to bring us home?
Yeah. Thank you so much for listening. Follow our socials. We are looking for guests. My brother, David, has a couple that are in the docket. I have one who isn't, so I'm waiting for him to make that decision. Guys, pray for discernment. Pray for wisdom. God will give it to you. I know he will. Jesus loves you. We love you. I love you, brother. You have anything to say?
Amen, brother. We love you. See you next time. Like, subscribe, and follow. And we'll catch up next week.
We've hit the 0 hour. That's a wrap on this week's transmission. New episodes drop weekly, so stay tuned and don't miss the next signal. Follow, subscribe, and spread the word. You've been listening to Zero Signal. We're out.
This episode is supported by ZavoLife. And let me tell you, I've actually been using this every day. I just mix a teaspoon into my morning smoothie, and it gives me this clean, steady energy that doesn't feel like a crash later in the day. What surprised me most is how much better my digestion and focus have been since I added it into my diet. It's packed with over 50% plant-based proteins, essential vitamins, minerals, fibers, and antioxidants. Literally a whole nutrient boost in one scoop. And honestly, I feel it when I don't take it. Have you ever been looking for something simple that actually supports your energy, gut health, and even skin and hair? This is it. My listeners get 30% off their entire order with my promo code ZeroSignal. That's the biggest discount they offer anywhere. Just go to zavo.life and use code ZeroSignal at checkout. Again, that's zavo.life, code ZeroSignal. Try it for 30 days, risk-free, and see if you notice the difference like I did.